that what it says, you've interpreted correctly, then you always wonder, when is it going to happen? Well, it's happening right now. For the last 28 years that I've been here, I've taught consistently the same thing about end time events. And I have constantly and repetitiously said that at some point in the very latter times, just before the Antichrist arose, you would see a merger of sorts, an association of sorts, between Roman Catholicism and the Islamic faith. A lot of people that I've talked to this about, when I first started teaching it, I guess I started teaching about 30 years ago, and I came here 28 years ago, they said I was crazy. Well, actually, I had a kind of an insight to it besides what the Bible said. I was convinced that the Bible indicated that the 10 horns on John's first beast and the 10 horns on John's last beast were 10 Islamic kings who would arise out of the old southern flank of the Roman Empire, and that there would be a merger between their beliefs and the Islamic beliefs. Now, that you can never have a perfect merger between the Muslim faith and the Catholic faith, but it has a lot of remarkable similarities. I knew that, and that was one of the reasons the Bible said it. I interpreted it, I believed it that way, and I knew some of the things that they had in common in belief. I also know that the Catholic Church loves money, economic power, political power, and they just love to have power. Now, if they can make friends with all the Arab countries, they'll have that power. The Pope started going to Arab countries. French Morocco was his first visit in 1985, but he's been going to Moroccan countries all over the place. And his last visit to Syria was particularly revealing. I see the Roman Catholic Church starting to get on the beast of Revelation 13, and the woman in chapter 17 and 18 is the Roman Catholic Church. It's coming together. They're starting to support the Arabs more than they do the Jews. So I'm going to be discussing some of the reasons that I was convinced that in chapter 17 and 18, the woman was the Roman Catholic Church, that the daughters that came out of her were the Protestant Reformation, and that the true church has maintained a lineage all the way from the Anabaptists clean on down to the present time. Now, in the book of Revelation, in chapter 17 and verse 18, we're told, "And the woman which thou sawest is that great city which reigneth over the kings of the earth." Now, at that time, there was only one city. This was what the world was to the people of that day. And all of this that you see in black, all the way from Azerbaijan, Armenia, Iran, Iraq, all the way across to the west to French Morocco, all of this area in here was just as much a part of the Roman Empire as was the section up in Europe. I have taught consistently that the southern flank, stretching from Morocco, Algeria, Tunisia, Libya, Egypt, all the way across to Iran, all the way as far north as Turkey, Armenia, Azerbaijan, I have taught that this is the area that the 10 horns will come from, the 10 kings. Things are shaping up over there in a remarkable way. And I'm not reading more into what I'm seeing than is there. I'm being very objective about it. One of the things that's happened just recently is something that I think is very interesting that involves the Roman Catholic Church. Now, the Roman Catholic Church is fabulously wealthy. I mean, they've got more money than Carter's got liver pills. And they have tremendous wealth, even in different types of artifacts and relics. During the more than 16 centuries since Emperor Constantine founded the first church of St. Peter on Vatican Hill, the Holy See has amassed one of the world's most extensive art collections. Works range from grand and heroic frescoes in the Sistine Chapel to exquisite diamond-encrusted papal rings, one bearing the likeness of Pope Pius IX, left, who presided from 1846 to 1878. He is said to have commissioned a dazzling chalice, right, made from gold and precious stones contained in the trappings of a horse presented to him by a Turkish sultan. The Vatican is far more than the administrative center of the Roman Catholic Church. Its museums, chapels, and library constitute a unique and wondrous treasury. Here are preserved some of the most sublime creations of man, inspired by his eternal yearning to give expression to the divine spirit. They've got art treasures over there that they're just priceless. They're loaded with money. They have the backing of the mafia behind them, because most of the people in the mafia are Catholic, they're Italian. And they believe that the Pope or the others can pray them out of purgatory, and it's very real to them. Now, I had warned for a long time that sooner or later the Catholic Church had to start getting on the back of the beast, who is the empire and the Antichrist himself, the final great religious empire. Pontiff pays visit to mosque. John Paul II becomes the first pope to do so and calls for brotherhood between religious groups. Syria's Mufti Sheikh Ahmad Krufto left meets Pope John II at the Umayyad Mosque in Damascus Old City, where the tomb of St. John the Baptist is located. They actually believe this is where John the Baptist was buried. Some of them say not his whole body, just his head. It's nothing but a tradition, it's nothing but a legend, and yet the Catholics thrive on that sort of thing. Now, John Paul II became the first pope to enter a mosque Sunday, calling for brotherhood between Christians and Muslims, and stepping across the sensitive line in his campaign for better relations among different faiths. Vatican and Syrian flags decorated the Umayyad Mosque in the old walled city at the heart of modern Damascus as the 80-year-old pontiff slipped off his shoes, as tradition requires, and entered the mosque. I've had several news articles on this, and I've read them very carefully. I've listened to direct quotes of what he had to say, and this is the prophecy update that we're going to be issuing tomorrow. We put this on the internet, and we're averaging close to 200 hits a day. We're getting them from all over the world. I've never seen so many different sections of the world that are latching onto this and copying these prophecy updates. I mean Russia, China, the Middle East, Europe, every nation. The only place I think isn't putting one out is the South Pole, Antarctica. I don't even know if they can down there. John in the book of prophecy used numerous symbols, figures, and types to illustrate both the things of his day and future events. At times, he used symbols to identify the nations of his day. Remember, he was exiled on Patmos. Remember, he had been exiled by the Romans. So when he used those symbols, did God mean for him to use them? Absolutely. Are they inspired? Absolutely. But one of the reasons, not the only reason, but one of the reasons he used them was so he didn't come out and directly name the Roman Empire as the beast. He was exiled on Patmos and was in no position to identify Rome in an unfavorable way. At times, he used symbols of his day to identify specific things and then explain their future roles in the last days. One of these symbols was a woman in chapters 17 and 18. He identified her as existing in his day and then proceeded to project her future role in the events of the last days. She was identified as a specific city in John's writing in Revelation 17, 18, where John states, "And the woman which thou sawest is that great city which reigneth over the kings of the earth." This was the Roman Empire. That was the known world at that time. Oh, they knew that some nations existed outside of it, but this was civilization at that time. All the rest of it was considered to be barbaric. And the capital was right there in Rome. So the woman is definitely Rome. There was only one city in his day that could possibly fit this description, the great city of Rome. In Revelation 17:7, John pictures this woman riding on a beast with 7 heads and 10 horns. The beast is emblematic of the Antichrist and his empire of the last days. Now, in chapter 13 of Revelation, you see the beast, and the beast has 10 crowns on her 10 horns. Those 10 crowns represent 10 kings, and those crowns are what they are wearing when the actual occurrence begins to unfold and before they surrendered them to the Antichrist. Now, the 7 heads are the 7 great empires that have persecuted and afflicted Israel, starting off with the Egyptian, the Assyrian, the Babylonian, the Medo-Persian, the Macedonian, the Roman Empire itself, which was this particular one, and the one that's coming, the 7th, is the empire of the Antichrist. And the head is pictured as bleeding because apparently this man goes through a process whereby, whether it's true or not, the world believes he has received a deadly wound and that he recovers from it miraculously, and then they say, "Who is likened to the beast? Who can make war against him?" If you can't kill a man, how can you make war against him, I think is the point. The beast is emblematic of the Antichrist and his empire of the last days. The 10 horns are 10 Islamic nations who were part of the old Roman Empire, which at its greatest extent stretched across Morocco, Algeria, Tunisia, Libya, northern Sudan, Egypt, northern Saudi Arabia, Jordan, Lebanon, Syria, Turkey, Armenia, Azerbaijan, Iraq, Iran, and Kuwait. Rome is now putting its foot in the stirrups of this beast to initially mount the beast with the 10 horns. I think Rome is getting on right now. I think that before too much longer, she's going to be backing the Islamic nations more than she backs the Israeli nations. She's shown inclinations to do that already. And in a moment, I'll show you some religious reasons why all this makes sense. The Pope, during his recent visit to Syria, fellowshipped with its top cleric, Sheikh Ahmad Kaftaro. They walked together in the ancient Umayyad Mosque in Damascus. This was the first time in history that a Pope of Rome had entered a Muslim mosque. The Pope was personally welcomed by Syrian President Bashar al-Assad at the Damascus airport. In Assad's speech, he accused Israel of violating justice, occupying Arab land, and attacking Christian and Muslim holy sites. In the Pope's address, the Pope stated, "It is time to return to the principles of international legality, the banning of acquisition of territory by force." Although he did not mention Israel by name, this appeared to be a reference to her. "I expect closer political, religious, and economic ties to develop between Rome and the Islamic nations." Let me repeat that. "I expect closer political, religious, and economic ties to develop between Rome and the Islamic nations." Watch and see if they don't. However, in the final analysis, Rome will regret her end-time linkage with Islam. After the beast has used the woman to favorably influence the Western world to his cause, having no other use for her, he will allow the 10 horns to burn her numerous churches to the ground across all of Islam. In Revelation 17:16, we are advised that the 10 horns who represent 10 Islamic kings shall make her desolate and naked and shall eat her flesh and burn her with fire. Most believe it is impossible for any sort of religious approval for Islam to be pursued by the Catholic Church. They just say, no, the Islamic faith, they're heathen. And Catholic Church, no, they just don't have anything in common. They have some more in common than you think. When the Quran was written in about 600 A.D., not B.C., 600 A.D., it was written by a man, Muhammad. He took the Old Testament, and they call the Israelis the people of the book, the people of the book. That means the Old Testament, the people of the book. Now, he took the book of the people of the book, which is the Old Testament, and he took the New Testament, which had been completed, of course, already in 600 A.D., and he put them together. And he left out what he didn't want, left in a lot of it, did everything that he possibly could to allow Christianity to draw close to Islam and to honor the forefathers of the Jews, but to discredit them. It's an amazing book. So many of the things that he wrote in there are truth. Then he has lies. Then he has truths. So it's a most remarkable book. And there are many things in that book that a lot of people don't realize are in there. If I hadn't read the thing, I wouldn't know. Joe Carlton is a good friend of mine. He's pastoring over to Queen. He's one of my best friends in the ministry. Good, sound, solid missionary Baptist. Joe and I had talked about this before, and I was shocked when I discovered that Joe Carlton had joined the Masons. I mean, it shocked me. Now, his wife, Edna, good friend, I love her to death, she was part of the Eastern Star, which is the female side of the Masonic Lodge. And her dad had been very strong in the Masonic Lodge, and so I don't know why it happened, but Joe ended up joining the Masonic Lodge. Joe is you say, well, he's not a very sound missionary Baptist. He is. But see, he just didn't know anything about the Masons. I didn't know that much about them, but I knew that they're not a good organization. Oh, they're good for passing out stuff and doing things to people in the community, but from a religious standpoint, no, they're not. Well, Joe is a very conscientious fella. So within a year, he had progressed so far. He's a very intelligent fella, very industrious, and he had actually progressed so far, they made him lodge master. I think that's the term. Now, they have the Grand Wizard and Hoopla and all that stuff. I get it all mixed up. But he was responsible, if the Lodge Master is not the title, I apologize, but he was in charge of teaching all the new recruits. And he had to take the books that they have, the Masons, and teach the new recruits that came in. Joe's very conscientious, so he started teaching. And he came across some symbols. And he had no idea what they were. So he went to the lodge master before him and asked him, and he said, oh, I don't know. He said, just don't teach, skip over that, go on. He said, just do what it says and go on, don't worry about it. Well, Joe's not built that way. So he went down to the Scottish Rites temple that they have in Little Rock. And he went to the Scottish Rites place and went in and asked the Grand Hoopla there, "What do these symbols mean?" And the Grand Hoopla didn't know. So he went to the highest authority he could here in the state. They had no idea what the symbols were. And there they were. They were supposed to be taught. So then he wrote to Albert Pike headquarters. I think it's in New York State, but I'm not sure. He wrote them a lengthy letter, put the symbols and everything in there, wanted to know what it was. It took a long, long, long time to get a reply because they had to research. You know what they finally discovered? They were symbols from the Islamic faith. And not only were they from the Islamic faith, but in the documents that they found that showed where they came from and incorporated into the Masons, it indicated that all of us, both Christians and Islam, were all brotherhood together, and we were brothers together. And so then Joe just quit. He stopped paying his dues, stopped going to lodge, because he realized he had gotten into something that was wrong. Now, I've never told that story before, and I hope somebody doesn't tell him I told, but it illustrates a point. This Islamic faith has certain similarities to Christianity. Why? Because the man that wrote it, half of it came out of the New Testament, and the other half came out of the Old Testament, and it's a corporation of writings. I want to show you some of the things they believe and why I think that in the end, religiously, they'll get on that horse of spiritual adultery. They'll get on that beast, and the two will have a closer union than Israel has with either one of them. However, when one compares the teachings of Catholics, Muslims, and Jews, one discovers that the Catholic and Islamic faiths in some areas are much closer than their connections with the Jewish faith. So here we go. Here are some comparisons, and they're interesting. Catholics use the Bible. Muslims use the Quran. Jews use the Old Testament. The comparisons between the Islamic and Catholic beliefs concerning Christ and Mary are as follows. Okay, Catholics and Muslims. They both believe that Jesus was born of a virgin named Mary. But the Jews do not. Two, they believe Christ's birth was announced to Mary by an angel. The Jews do not. They both believe Christ was a messenger sent by God. The Jews do not. They both believe that John the Baptist was a messenger sent to announce Jesus as a messenger from God. The Jews do not. They both view the apostles of Jesus as spreading the truth. That's a shocker to some people. But they both, Islamic and Catholic, view the apostles of Jesus as spreading the truth. The Jews do not. Catholics believe Jesus is the Son of God. Now here comes your big difference. The Muslims in their Quran clearly state that Allah, their one God, has decreed he will not have a son. But you see, the Jews don't agree with them on any of it. Well, true, this is the most important aspect of it. But the Catholics are closer to the Islamic faith than most people realize. And I can see how the Roman Catholic faith can be used by Islam and the Arabic nations to gain world popularity and put the Jews down. And I think it's already starting to happen. When Pope John II became the first pope to enter an Islamic mosque while calling for brotherhood between Christians and Muslims, he unknowingly began to prepare the ride of the woman on the beast. By the time Israel is driven to the Negev wilderness, the woman will support the actions of the beast in recovering Arab lands. I have taught this for a long time. This isn't something new. Now, there's something else I taught here for a long time, and I've told you and I've said it over and over again. Now, I'm not saying that blank is Antichrist, but he's a good candidate. And if you come back to me and say, you said he was the Antichrist, I didn't. I've been watching candidates over and over again. And there's one that has made a very, very deep impression on me. Now, the Pope is going to do something very interesting. A cardinal get together in Rome. Why has Pope John II summoned all 183 cardinals to Rome next week? His stated reason, to help launch the new church initiatives he outlined in his January 6th letter, Novo Millennio in Conte. But institutional innovation hasn't been a hallmark of his 22-year reign. And Vatican watchers note that in what many consider his waning months, the increasingly frail pontiff, who's soon to be 81, is not entertaining new ideas. They speculate that the real purpose of the three-day meeting is to give the cardinals, especially the 44 new ones, a chance to get to know one another better before they gather again to elect his successor. Another guess. John Paul called a meeting to announce his resignation. According to that scenario, the cardinals would remain in Rome for a quick conclave to name the next pope. But most Vatican authorities say that the pope would never resign. He believes, they say, that taking leave of the job is God's decision, not his. Meanwhile, John Paul has just completed a grueling 6-day pilgrimage to Greece, Syria, and Malta, and plans a trip to the Ukraine in June. Says his spokesman, Dr. Janine Navarro-Valls, I wish that someone, perhaps with great success, but better success than I've had, would explain the concept of a weekend to the Pope. I'm not saying he should do nothing, maybe just read and rest a little. Well, I don't know why he's getting him there, but I do think it's directly associated with eventually naming another Pope. Now, 44 of these fellas are new fellas, and I don't think they're going to elect some old fogey that's already in his 80s. I have always watched this one fella. I've watched him ever since the early 80s. His name's Jean-Marie Lustiger. And to me, he is the best candidate for the false prophet that exists out there today. I'm not saying he's going to be elected. I'm just saying he's an awfully good candidate. And it's something to kind of watch during the next few months, weeks, because I don't think the Pope's going to live much longer. Now, we find in Revelation 13:11, and I beheld another beast come up out of the earth. He had two horns like a lamb and spake as a dragon. I certainly agree with the standard interpretation like this. He has the appearance of a lamb, two-horned male lamb, and they're normally associated with some forms of tranquility except during the mating season. But he speaks as a dragon. In other words, inside, he is possessed, driven, motivated, operated, and controlled by the spirit of Satan. He speaks with the tongue of Satan. On the outside, he appears to be a genuine Lamb of God, but he is not. Verse 12, and he exerciseth all the power of the first beast before him, and causeth the earth and them that dwell therein to worship the first beast whose deadly wound was healed. The Catholic religion, I have read, of course, but I've traveled all over this earth. In the National Security Agency, Lord have mercy, I've been to one end of this earth to the other. The only place I haven't been is Australia, New Zealand, and the South Pole. It's amazing the number of Catholic churches that you find across this earth. It's amazing how far the tentacles of the Catholic Church have extended across this great earth. They're all over. Now, the Catholics have the belief that when the Pope declares something to be a miracle, it is a bona fide, genuine miracle. Once something that is supposedly a miracle has been performed, the Pope has certain procedures whereby people at lower levels declare it, they believe it to be a miracle, and then it's kicked up to higher levels. And finally, the Pope either approves it or disapproves it. I think when this man is wounded by a weapon of war, he has a deadly wound. Whether or not he actually dies, I can't say, but I do believe they will think he died. And I think this man will then declare that he has divine powers and that God is with him and that he is the man of the hour sent by God. And he doeth great wonders so that he maketh fire come down from heaven on the earth in the sight of men. I think this false prophet, as he's called, will come from Rome. I think he will be able to perform miraculous acts. Now, when I say miraculous acts, I mean the appearance of them from all outer signs will be absolutely miraculous. And I think this is literal, that fire will come down from heaven on the earth in the sight of men. I think he'll show signs and wonders to prove that he is the one, the messenger who comes, who announces the true Christ. I think he's the equivalent in the unholy world of John the Baptist in the true spiritual world. And I think he's the one who's going to proclaim this man as being the true Christ, particularly after he has this deadly wound and then recovers. And you see with them that dwell on the earth by the means of those miracles which he had power to do in the sight of the beast, saying to them that dwell on the earth that they should make an image to the beast which had the wound by a sword and did live. In several other places it's called a deadly wound. And I'm going to be going into that, and I'm going to show you why I don't believe that's just an empire dying, but a man who represents the last empire before I'm finished with this. And he causeth all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and bond, to receive a mark in their right hand or in their foreheads, and that no man might buy or sell, save he that had the mark or the name of the beast or the number of his name. Here is wisdom. Let him that hath understanding count the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man, and his number is 666. And later on I'll talk some about that and how I'm quite confident that you are supposed to look at this and what particular cipher you are supposed to use on it. You can't make up your own cipher. You have to use the same one John did. And that's the question. What did he use as a cipher? And I'll deal with that sometime in the future, Lord willing. Now, I do not believe that the Antichrist is going to dominate the whole world. I absolutely, positively do not believe it. Could I be wrong? Yes. But you see, throughout the scriptures, the Lord uses exaggerated hyperboles. Now, some people say, why, the Lord never lies. He never uses anything like that. He does consistently. Many times when he was referring to all the world, the whole earth, wherever men dwell, you can go back and look at it and see that the prophecy, when it was already fulfilled, it didn't dominate the whole world as we know it today. So I'm one of these hardheads who believes that when you talk about fulfillment of prophecy, it's going to be the area that was in existence at the time that the man wrote the prophecy. I think this Antichrist is going to rise out of Syria. I think they're going to have strong economic ties with Europe. I believe that he'll wheel together 10 other Arab nations. He'll pluck up three and put his own puppets in. And I think he's going to become economically wealthy, particularly operating from Egypt. Because of this, I believe that he will be able to control the economic situation throughout the Middle East, all of North Africa, Europe, probably parts of Russia, maybe not, and parts of, well, certainly all the way across the Middle East, as far over as Iran. I believe that there is where the mark's going to be put on. Now, this is not wishful thinking on my part. You can't be a seventh trumpet man and believe that we're going after the seventh trumpet and be accused of wishful thinking, because I think we're going to be going through part of this. But I do not believe the mark's going to be put on in this country. I think things are going to be tight. I think food's going to be scarce. I think we're going to have some hard, tough times. I think that food's going to be at a premium. I think life's going to be the quality it is now, much less. But I don't think the mark's going to be put on in this country. I believe over there it's a fairly simple thing to get them to take a mark, but in this country it would be a very difficult thing, because even those who are unchurched know what the mark of the beast is. Now, I'll be talking more about that as time progresses, Lord willing. But this man, who is Cardinal Lustiger, is an interesting man. This is a very old article. This is something I showed you way back in the early 80s. At that time, he was 57. He is about, I think, 3 or 4 years older than I am. I'm 68. He's probably about 72. That may sound very old to you, but it's not all that old, and I think he's a good candidate. Cardinal Lustiger, 57, was born in Paris to parents who were agnostic Polish Jews. They're full-blooded agnostic Polish Jews, so a good candidate. He was named Aaron Lustiger. At 14, when the Germans occupied Paris, Lustiger converted to Catholicism, very conveniently. He also changed his name, because Aaron was a dead giveaway, and when you put Jean-Marie in front of Lustiger, you can't definitely identify it as being Jewish. At 14, when the Germans occupied Paris, Lustiger converted to Catholicism. He later changed his name to Jean-Marie, attending a seminary school, and was appointed the student's chaplain at the Sorbonne. For years, students there respected and admired his scholarship, intellect, and flexibility. After a stint as a parish priest in Paris-Tonian wealthy 16 arrondissement, where he mixed with leading intellectuals, artists, and industrialists, Lustiger was appointed Bishop of Orleans in 1979. In 1981, he succeeded Francis Cardinal Marty as Archbishop of Paris. Lustiger is an eloquent speaker who appears from time to time on French radio and television. His relationships with Pope John Paul II and French President Francis Mitterrand have been described as special by both his detractors and supporters. During World War II, Lasseter's mother died in Auschwitz. Now, this fella is very, very intelligent. Some of the other stuff, I've got a stock of that high and I can't find it over there. But he's written quite a few books that are published within the Catholic faith. Very popular books about faith, about theology, about religion, about a multiplicity of things. He's very, very popular, very well educated. He's a perfect candidate. I think that he's probably going to be the next false prophet. But I'm by no means certain, and he may drop dead. You may pick up the paper tomorrow and say Jean Marie Lasseter died. But the truth of the matter is, at the present time, he's the best candidate. I'm really curious to see, eventually, what's going to happen when the next pope dies. Four patriarchs will boycott Vatican Synod. But what I wanted you to notice was his statement in this. This is Jean Marie's statement. Never has the centuries-old opposition between the churches been overcome as much as it has in recent years, Cardinal Jean Marie Lasseter of Paris told reporters. He's one of these fellows that would like to see all the Protestant daughters that came out of the Roman Catholic Church in the great Emancipation Movement, the great Reformation Movement of Martin Luther's time. When Catholics get children, they put them through a catechism. And the catechism, they say, give me a child, and by the time he is six, I will train him such that he will always be a Catholic. Now, the Roman Catholic Church introduced its first new catechism in 426 years. The faith issued to the world's 900 million Catholics since the Reformation. This is a great event that will be inscribed in the history of the Church, said Cardinal Jean Marie Lasseter, Archbishop of Paris. This catechism addresses the diversity of the multitude. Now, this man has very liberal ideas. He's very popular. The new guidelines will be used by bishops, teachers, pastors, and theologians as they prepare catechisms for teaching children and adults. The French version of the catechism was introduced by Lasseter. The expression of new sins is not in this catechism. Homosexuals must be welcomed with respect, compassion, and delicacy, the catechism says. So this fella is a marvelous candidate. Now, he is a Jew, a full-blooded Jew. And I wondered how long it would take him to get down to Israel and to make some type of a political contact with Israel. Well, he finally did in 1995. I first ran into him in the early 80s. But this is when he first made his move toward Israel. Ashkenazi chief rabbi Israel Meir I, and there are two kinds of Jews, Ashkenazi and Sephardi. Ashkenazi chief rabbi Israel Meir attempted to prevent the Lao. Rabbi, I couldn't even see that. Israel Meir Lao attempted to prevent the participation of the Jewish-born Roman Catholic Cardinal of Paris, Jean Marie Lasseter, in this week's Silence of God conference at Tel Aviv University. Lasseter, a Holocaust survivor who is considered a candidate to become the next pope, converted to Catholicism in his teens. So he's a good candidate. Whether or not the pope will name him, I can't say one way or the other. But I'm going to be talking later on about this mark of the beast, about the different codes and things that have been developed. I worked in codes and ciphers in the agency. I didn't know a thing about them until I was trained. But you can take a name, work from the name and make a cipher from it, then apply it back to the name and it'll say anything you want. That's how they kept coming up with Henry Kissinger and all these people as the Antichrist. But this one, I believe, has a very definite cipher to it. I think it's based on the language, and so, Lord willing, we'll talk about that next time around. Plus, I also want to talk about this beast that had the deadly wound and was healed, because I think it's interesting. The important thing about what I've shown you is simply this. Folks, this stuff's happening. Now, I realize I can't get it all right, but at least I've probably got half of it right, and this part I'm sure of. I believe the Lord's coming very soon. I've always said he would come before 2008, and I still believe that. But it's coming down, and it's real, and it's genuine. And even if you didn't have all these things happening between the Islamic faith and the Catholic faith and all the things I've mentioned, all you have to do is open your door and look out in the streets and see what's going on out there. All you have to do is watch television. All you have to do is see the moral standards that are being set forth on television. I watch the news and the weather, and the rest of it just has to go its own way. But brothers and sisters in Christ, we're coming down. And we better get ready for some tough times, because they're coming. And I warn you ahead of time, they're coming. And it would be nice, I suppose, if it all just kind of phased in gradually, and we could see it just gradually deteriorate. I think it's going to be sudden and abrupt and without warning. I think all of a sudden, probably around 2003, 2004, who knows, I think all of a sudden it's going to strike like a rattlesnake, sudden and quick, more like a copperhead. I don't think we're going to get the rattle before it goes off. I think everything's going to hit about the same time. Economic depression, the earthquakes, the wars in Israel, I think it's going to be devastating, sudden and shocking when it occurs, and a lot of people aren't ready for it. I don't suppose I'm ready for it either, but I'm a lot more ready for it than some people who aren't even aware of what I'm talking about tonight, because it's coming, and I just thank God I'm on the right side. I.K. Cross preached a message one time down at Texarkana I'll never forget. It was simply called, "We're Gonna Win." And he pointed out all the different heartaches and problems we have in life, but in the end, he said, "We're gonna win." And the only reason we're gonna win is because of who our leader is, our head is, and our protector, and that's Jesus Christ. Brother Kenneth Eubanks, would you dismiss us?